5 years ago today, President Bush stood in front of a banner proclaiming mission accomplished and said this.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Today, the White House says mission accomplished referred only to the success of the aircraft carrier he was standing on. That make any difference? Good morning. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Kind of crazy. Two words that went from meaning job well done went to meaning the opposite. Today, it's almost an insult to say mission accomplished. What other words or phrases have had such a steep decline and fall? You tell us. It's The Takeaway question for this May Day.
In other headlines, Defense Secretary Robert Gates is expected to announce new rules today, making it easier for returning troops to get counseling for combat stress. Today, Somalian insurgents say a U.S. airstrike has killed the man thought to be the head of al-Qaeda in that country. The BBC's Adam Minot reports.
Four loud explosions ripped apart the home of Adan Hashi Aro in the town of Dusamareb in central Somalia, killing him and eight other people, including another militia commander.
The U.S. government has declared Iro's group a terrorist organization. It's been blamed for attacks on Ethiopian soldiers. U.S. officials have not confirmed responsibility for today's airstrike.
In northern Maine, heavy rain and record amounts of snowmelt have caused the St. John River to flood. Scientists say it's a 100-year flood. More than 600 people have been evacuated in the town of Fort Kent. The Justice Department says the nation's spy court approved more than 2,300 warrants for lucky objects of eavesdropping last year. That's a 9% increase from 2006. The spy court only rejected three of those in full.
The high cost of food's on the agenda in Congress today. A loaf of bread, as many of you might have noticed, has gone up 15% from last year. Eggs are up 25%. A joint House-Senate Economic Committee will investigate the impact on families. It's the 1st of May, May Day, and for the third year in a row, rallies are planned in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, among other cities, in support of immigrant rights. While immigration reform efforts failed in Congress, states have passed or proposed 1,000 bills aimed at cracking down on immigrants.
Stocks made modest declines yesterday. The Dow went down 12, S&P 500 lost 5, and the NASDAQ lost 13 points. The theme from Mission Impossible, but because of that 60s show, Mission Impossible doesn't mean Mission
or
Impossible.
Or Tom Cruise.
It means
in
Mission Possible.
In Mission Possible.
Because those missions weren't impossible. Today, in honor of Mission Accomplished, phrases that have been destroyed by forces out of their control are what we're celebrating today. What needs to be retired? What phrases need to be retired? You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE like this woman did.
Hi, this is Nicole from North Brunswick, New Jersey. I'd like to retire, no offense, but, which only precedes a very offensive statement, usually.
I think she's right. Mayday, that's one that needs to be retired.
Or behind closed doors.
Yep, or think outside the box, says Rachel Thompson from Dobbs Ferry, New York. Because everyone thinks outside the box now. Do you know anyone who thinks inside the
and
box?
And she says there's no one left inside the box.
That's The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Boy, it wasn't so long ago that the name Barack Obama was synonymous with the phrase inevitability or the term inevitability in electoral politics. But that is no longer the case because something very big is shifting in the American electorate, at least if you look at the latest New York Times CBS News poll. A short month ago, 51% of Democratic primary voters, or 69% of Democratic primary voters said Barack Obama would win the Democratic nomination today. It's 51% in the latest poll. Joining us to talk about the numbers in this latest snapshot of the American electorate from CBS News and the New York Times is the Times' own Janet Elder. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
What happened? And when did you take this poll?
Well, we decided to go into the field and take a look after the Pennsylvania primary at what was happening to the Democratic Party, not realizing, of course, that there would be this eruption over the Reverend Wright's remark. So we just happened to be in the field while all of that was going on. And what we found was that Barack Obama had suffered quite a bit as a result of those remarks. And we can't forget about Hillary Clinton's solid victory in Pennsylvania. I'm sure that added to all of this.
One of the things that's curious about the poll result here is that while Barack Obama seems to have joined the pack, he no longer is sort of different from the other two candidates. He seems to have acquired a kind of human quality of fallibility that he didn't have before. He was more of a movement, it seemed to me, that people had a lot of emotional sort of stake in. He's kind of in a dead heat with Hillary Clinton. But Hillary and John McCain haven't particularly gained much in this period that you've been measuring Democrats and Republicans.
That's exactly right. Barack Obama's loss was not Hillary Clinton's gain, necessarily.
What does that mean?
It means that their voters in this primary season, this protracted contest, look more like general election voters than they do like primary voters. It's gone on so long, the loyalties have really had a chance to cement, and the voters on both sides are really dug in.
And it's going to stay this way, you think?
It is going to, judging by the poll, it's going to stay this way. The voters fully expect, the Democratic primary voters fully expect that the nominee will not be decided until the convention, and there is a lot of resistance to having the party leader step in and try to end it.
So the preference among the people you polled is that it go the distance, in some sense.
In some sense, yeah. Maybe it's more of an acceptance than a preference.
Hmm. Is it, or perhaps even wanting the voters to all have their say. In other words, there are still several contests left between now and June, and not wanting the party leaders to step in would mean that each of the states will continue to go through the process and be meaningful as each candidate tries to march up to the just over 2,000 delegates they need to win the nomination.
That's right. The voters told us that they wanted the process to play out.
It's interesting that they're happy with the process, even though it must be a little frustrating to go from total belief in Barack Obama being the nominee to now it being something of a toss-up. Does this break down in any interesting demographic way, these numbers?
We haven't seen a whole lot of demographic shift, although for reasons that I don't really know the answer to, Senator Clinton seems to have lost some of the support that she had among men in our latest poll. I don't read a whole lot into that. We'll see what happens, you know, as time goes on and we do more polling.
This week, NBC and the Wall Street Journal had a poll, and in some commentary on that last night, Republicans were suggesting that it's possible that these latest poll numbers indicate that Barack Obama has suffered the damage that he's going to suffer from the Jeremiah Wright controversy, and that it's kind of off the table for November if he should be the nominee. What do you think?
You know, I try to stay out of the prediction business because I'm always wrong. But
you know, it doesn't stop me.
Doesn't stop him. And Janet, it's funny that you say that because, of course, we are talking about a snapshot, and that's the only thing that you're proclaiming, right? Is that
that's
you're polling
right
at a particular moment, and this is how people feel. And of course, that means they can also change. We've seen a lot of that in this.
I almost had her nailed. She was nailed, and then you gave her the out.
But what the poll did show us is that all three of these candidates have some real vulnerabilities. And, you know, Senator Obama does better than Senator Clinton does on sharing the values of most Americans, and he does better on not being beholden to special interest groups. She and Senator McCain do better than Senator Obama on whether or not they'd be able to wisely handle an international crisis. So they've each got some vulnerabilities moving ahead.
Hmm. But the big headline is 18% of Democratic voters. It's down 18%, those who think Barack Obama is going to be the nominee, which really turns this campaign from a kind of inevitability sort of wave of change to a sort of down and dirty battle all the way to November, no matter who the nominee is.
That's right.
Very interesting. Janet Elder of the New York Times, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And the days and hours, John, are ticking away for the candidates who are going to be facing the voters in North Carolina and Indiana on Tuesday. But today it's May Day, and for some that means
May
International
Day.
Workers' Day. In Cuba, it means tens of thousands of people will get... Were you screaming?
Yeah, well, May Day also means
May Day!
May Day. Yeah. In Cuba, though, it means that tens of thousands of people are going to get together. They're going to celebrate a tradition started by Fidel Castro's regime nearly 50 years ago.
Never we, the Cuban people, felt so free as now.
Are you a communist?
Well, wait for the history. The history will take what we are.
That was Fidel Castro, and that was 1960. And today, many historians would say, yes, he was a communist. But his brother, Raul Castro, is in charge now, and he's making small but ideologically important changes. The BBC's Michael Voss joins us from Revolution Square, where Cubans will gather today. Michael, Raul's been president since February, and cell phones and work bonuses are suddenly part of the lexicon there in Cuba. What is Raul trying to do?
I think there's two things that Raul Castro is trying to do. One, he's trying to create a slightly sort of softer, friendlier form of communism, where, as you say, you can buy cell phones. He's also lifted the bans on buying DVDs and computers, although none of those have appeared in the shops yet. And he's told Cubans they can stay in the same resort hotels that foreigners stay in. That's the sort of the softer communism he's trying to create.
Well, do we have a name for that, Michael? Michael, do we have a name for that? Could we call it like Perestroikania or something like that?
I like that one.
Yeah.
You've patented that one.
but Michael, are people like they're excited about the idea of being able to buy these things and also about the possibilities of what's to come, but we're still talking about a country where the salary is less than $20 per month.
Yes, we are, and this is one of the huge, big economic problems that Raul Castro is going to have to grapple with. What you do have, though, is remember you've got 1.5 million Cubans living abroad, many of them in the United States, and there are remittances coming back to families in Cuba. Those working with the tourist industry, for example, will have some access to hard currency. So, I mean, there's not a lot of people with the money to buy these things. After about 3-4 days, they'd sold 8,000 mobile phones, for example. However, it has created goodwill. People are saying, all right, I don't have the money to buy it, or I don't have the money for the hotel, but at least now I can if I had the money. And maybe if I save up next year, I could take my wife to a hotel for a night for our wedding anniversary. It's created a level of goodwill that I think will give Raul Castro time to grapple with the really big economic issues. Don't expect any loosening whatsoever politically. You know, the Communist Party rules supreme here, and Raul Castro has made it clear it will continue to do so.
In fact, he said earlier this week that he was going to convene a Communist Party conference at the end of 2009, and that's something that hasn't happened since 1997. Yeah. But is there this general sense that he is going to be opening up Cuba in a way that we haven't seen in modern history?
I think there is. I mean, there's been a lot of speculation about whether Raul would follow the Chinese model and open up in that way.
Michael Voss, BBC Cuba correspondent. John, I think we're going to keep his number on speed dial because
absolutely,
lots to come there in Cuba.
Cuba used to mean casinos, but in the 60s it meant Russian missiles. What's changing about the language? Mission accomplished has been ruined by the Bush administration. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE to give us your phrase that you want retired. Like, for instance, at the end of the day, it's over. Scrub it, says Marcus Grainer on our website.
And Vernon Reed says, paradigm shift has got to go, and that's in capital letters with 2 exclamation points at the end.
Coming up, we have an extraordinary surprise for our listeners also.
Do we?
Oh, yeah, here in the studio.
I think it's going to be a surprise to me, too, though.
It's incredible. Okay. I mean, the person we have in our studio, incredible.
This is The Takeaway.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Okay, time for some other headlines. It's Thursday, May the 1st, and we have Femi here with those.
The markets open in just over an hour. Stock prices dropped slightly after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates on Wednesday by a quarter of 1%. The number of Hispanics in the United States grew to 45.5 million last year. The U.S. Census reports that the Hispanic population grew by 1.4 million people. Hispanics make up the largest minority group with 15% of the population. A wildfire in Southern California is almost fully contained. The fire crept close to homes in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains. Progress is also being made on fires near Reno and the Grand Canyon National Park. Texas officials are investigating possible sexual abuse of some boys at a polygamist compound. They've also uncovered a history of physical injuries among dozens of the children. American scientists are examining new medical techniques after investigating a man who apparently regrew a severed finger. Lee Spivak lost half a finger in an accident. He said he applied an experimental powder over several days and found that the finger regrew to its normal length.
Outside of the finger was getting white and was actually moving up towards the end. And each day I covered that it was up further. And then finally, after I ran out of the material, a few days after that, it closed up and it was a finger.
The material? What do you mean experimental powder?
The powder was recommended by his brother.
What, it's like Miracle-Gro?
Well, it's made with dried pig bladder. Is it April the 1st or May the
1st? I think I need some scientific
dried pig bladder
proof on that one.
You go down, you get some dried pig bladder, you put that on your finger, and it's going to grow back.
Maybe that could be my long-term assignment.
Yeah.
I'll check out the finger
Thank
for
you.
You.
Health tips from Femi. Thank you, Femi.
You're welcome.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project.
A catalyst for examining the decisions that confront people
trying to do the right thing.
Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, New York Times Radio, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. As we noted 5 years ago, mission accomplished meant job well done. Today it means, oh great, now I have to finish this mess. We're talking about on The Takeaway today phrases that need to be retired, that have been changed, that have been destroyed by events out of their control. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE. I like that, 8-MY-TAKE. We'd like to eat your take. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and deliver your suggestion. For instance, I'd love never to hear now more than ever again, said Ed Bresky. And joining us now is our friend and contributor, Vince Williams.
Good morning.
From
good morning.
The Baltimore City
welcome.
Paper.
Thank you.
So what would you change?
Well, to go along with mission accomplished and our esteemed president, that whole passive mistakes have been made.
Mistakes have been made.
And the whole passive voice, the passive variations of it.
We got to get rid of that.
Well, I need people to take credit for what they've done. This, you know, mistakes have been made. Coffee was spilt. Reports weren't done. Like there's that ghost from the old Family Circus cartoon that just kind of goes and does things. So,
what in sort of general conversation would you retire?
Think outside the box.
One of our listeners.
Think outside.
Yeah. Definitely. And also, I think, obviously, beat around the bush has come to have
oh, man.
A new meaning. No, that means to not get directly to the point, but people sort of make jokes about that relative to our president, if you're a big critic of
Can
his.
Can you get in trouble for saying that?
I'd get rid of that.
I'd get rid of that, too. But let's take a listen, because folks have been leaving us messages on our spin box, and here's what one of the callers had to say.
Hi, this is Luke Kang from Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. I'd like to retire the phrase, to be honest, because it sort of means well, what are you lying to me before? Thank you very much. I know.
That's great.
Thank you very much. That's a good one.
Carol Carter is my hero. She called Spinvox and said, I'm calling to submit the word impacted. It is a total misuse of the English language. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. I never use it. I can't stand
using it. No, it's not a good word. You can't use it as a verb. You can use it as a noun, which is the impact is, as opposed to impacted, because that usually refers to impacted teeth.
I was about to say, what if you have a tooth?
Yeah.
Well,
then
that's
an adjective.
But that's an adjective, right.
It's gone. Get away. Go away. You know, 2008 is actually expected to be a year where more names will be changed. Official geographic names will be changed than almost ever before. And joining us from the U.S. Geological Survey is Jennifer Runyon there in Washington. You're out in arrest in Virginia, right, Jennifer?
That's right, yes.
Jennifer, you are the on the U.S. Board of Geographic Names, right?
I'm a research staff person for the board. That's right.
And the U.S. board is looking at a movement to change names that involve a particular word. Describe this movement and what it's all about.
Well, a little bit of background, if I could.
Sure.
The Board on Geographic Names, it's a multi-federal agency board made up of 21 different members representing various federal agencies. It's been around since 1890, so this is not really a recent invention or even a recent movement.
No, but it's comforting to know that there's an actual board on geographic names. But what's changing here now?
Well, the board is responsible for standardizing names for federal usage and has been in the business for changing names and looking at new names for its entire history. What's happened recently, and by recent I mean the last 10, 15 years, there's been an increase in efforts to change names that certain groups or certain individuals consider to be derogatory or offensive.
What's a big one right now?
Well, I know you're leading to the word squaw, which is
squaw. S-Q-A-W.
S-Q-U-A-W.
S-Q-U-A-W. Right.
It's a
great speller.
Algonquian.
Impressive.
Algonquian Indian word that goes back several hundred years, and for most of its history was really not considered offensive to most people that used it, or at least it's become that way in recent years as a perception, perceived to be derogatory by certain groups. It's almost because the way it's been used,
There are some famous places with the word squaw in them.
That's
like
right.
Squaw Valley in Tahoe. What places are likely to change?
Well, right now there are still 940 geographic features nationwide that include the word squaw. Primarily in the western states, less common in the east, although there are some in New England. Maine has a few and other northeastern states, but it's very much a word that appears the further west you get in the nation. You're right, Squaw Valley is probably the most well-known because of the Olympics, and it is a name of a ski resort. But there are many, many lakes, streams, mountains.
Squaw Peak in Phoenix has already been changed.
That was changed just about 3 weeks ago. That's right, yes. It was changed to Piestewa Peak, a new name that would honor Lori Piestewa. She was a young woman, served in the Army in Iraq, was killed very early in the combat, and the name was changed by the U.S. board just about 3 weeks ago.
Jennifer, how do you decide what the new name is going to be? What does that process look like?
Well, the board doesn't make any decisions at all as to what the new name should be, other than reacting to proposals that it receives from other interested parties. In other words, the board is a very reactive body. We don't go looking for name problems, name issues, names need to be changed. We simply sit back and wait for proposals to come to us, and they can come from private citizens, local governments, tribal nations, state governments.
But it's really interesting that the as history proceeds, the meaning of names that were settled, presumably, can suddenly come up and require change. And squaw, which seems settled maybe to some, is actually offensive to Native Americans. And there's a movement in a whole number of states that could actually mean that the board's change of names could have more changes in 2008 than in any other time in the last couple of decades, right?
That's right. That's right. In fact,
well, we got to go, Jennifer, but thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I love that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, because it just shows that nature of an evolving culture.
Think they're going to change the Redskins in Washington? Think that'll ever change?
Some people have been arguing that for years.
Femi Okey is here with the headlines.
Yeah, I'm changing my name back to okay.
Okay.
That's okay with you.
I mean, I'm in flames today. Man.
It's 29 minutes past the hour. May Day marches in Los Angeles start in just over 2 hours and expected to draw large crowds. In international news, the American State Department says Iran is the world's most active state sponsor of terrorism. Del Daly is the U.S. coordinator of the Office of Terrorism.
Iranian authorities continue to provide lethal support, including weapons, training, funding and guidance, to some Iraqi militant groups that target coalition and Iraqi security forces and Iraqi civilians.
Daly adds that Iran provides aid to Palestinian terrorist groups, Lebanese Hezbollah and Taliban fighters in Afghanistan. Talks continue in Dubai to restore judges sacked by Pakistan President Pervez Musharraf. Officials say progress has been made but still disagree on some legal and constitutional matters. A decision is likely today. I'll bring you that later or tomorrow. And that's your news.
Thank you, Femi.
Thank you.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project.
Now featuring Mandy and Lester.
A short film about a girl who loses 2 boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
A boy who finds those cookies.
And who finds that returning them isn't going to be as simple as it seems.
Available at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's Thursday, May 1st, and today 9 Iraqi civilians were killed in a car bombing. This after a deadly month there. Iraqi officials report over 1,000 civilians were killed, and the U.S. military's toll has hit a 7-month high, along with renewed concerns about Iranian involvement in Iraq. Now Iraq's prime minister is taking new steps to stem the violence, sending an elite delegation of senior Shiite Iraqi leaders to Tehran to discuss reports Iran is arming and financing Iraqi militias. Alyssa Rubin is the deputy Baghdad bureau chief of the New York Times, and she joins us from there right now. Alyssa, is this being talked about as a meaningful intervention by Iraq's leadership?
I think it's very hard to know whether it will be meaningful or not. I mean, these things are the Iraqis go to the Iraqi government officials go a lot to Tehran. They have a lot of connections there. And whether this will be different remains to be seen. It was something that is brought about at the behest and instigation of the prime minister, and so it has a somewhat different sheen to it. But I don't think we can tell yet.
Now, whether
it will be more significant than other discussions.
In recent weeks, the U.S. officials have ratcheted up concerns about Iran's involvement, saying, for example, they believe that weapons recovered in Iraq recently have marks that indicate they were manufactured recently in Iran, and it's showing that Iranians are backing militants' efforts after they said that they wouldn't. But for Iraqis, it's a very complicated relationship because there's also, besides these military and political concerns and ties, we're talking about religious and kinship ties between Iraqis and Iranians.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Iran is a very has a very complex identity here in Iraq, or the Iranians do, because you have to remember, on the one hand, they fought a very bitter 8-year war, and you know there were believed to be a million dead on each side, and so there's enormous acrimony and distrust. At the same time, the other Shiite majority country in the region is Iran, and Iraq is also majority Shiite. The government is heavily Shiite here, and so there's a certain sense of a certain kind of brotherhood, I guess. And also, you know, common shrines, common holidays, common ways of worship, and tribes that span the border. Now, some of those tribes don't like their Iranian counterparts. Some of them do. It's a very muddled situation, and certainly not, they're not seen as complete enemies or as complete friends.
In Iraq, I think you talk about there are some growing concerns about sectarian violence, of growing violence between Sunnis on Sunnis and also Shia on Shia. How would you describe that as a destabilizing force in Iraq?
As a destabilizing force?
As a potentially destabilizing force.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, first of all, when people are killing each other, it's automatically destabilizing, because almost always people are caught in the middle who didn't do anything. So that's a given. But the other thing is that there's really not a consensus about how people are going to achieve power. And so if you don't have any consensus that the electoral system works, or you know, that the elected government is the real government, and if people are fighting each other with weapons rather than in the courts or in the political system, it is
certainly
by its nature destabilizing.
Right.
And particularly now that you have somewhat more segregated communities. There was a lot of sectarian cleansing in over the last sort of year and a half, 2 years.
Alyssa Rubin, New York Times Deputy Baghdad Bureau Chief. Thank you.
From Baghdad, which we might call today Mission Accomplished theme park. Not to be flip, Bush said mission accomplished 5 years ago today, and so our takeaway question is, what phrase needs to be retired? 877-8-MY-TAKE is how you can call and leave your suggestion, or mytake@thetakeaway.org. And here's a great response from Rick Rubin. Just wanted to mention contronyms, or words that have developed two opposite meanings over the years, like sanction or cleave. I love that. My favorite new meaning of a word is gay, which has morphed again from happy to homosexual, that we know, but he says it's now morphed to hopeless, as in, that's so gay. I think that's interesting.
No, that is. And Jamie Robinson's clearly listening to our show, because he writes, speaking of Cuba, economic embargo is a phrase that's got to go.
That's good. That's good.
And he's listening to us online.
Right, right. So, Vince, more from
outrage.
From the English language. Outraged.
Outrage. Outrage.
How could that go, and how does that meaning change? If you're outraged by something, it's offensive.
How often have people really been outraged, though? I mean, actually filled with rage. I just think it's overused.
Renee says, please banish the fact is, or the fact of the matter is. That's, it never is used to denote a fact. It's just trying to give an air of truthiness. Oh, that's, you know, now there's somebody who invented a word. That's Stephen Colbert, invented truthiness, right?
And here's Ed Bresky. He said, ugh, I'd love to never hear now more than ever.
Now
again,
more than ever.
It may have actually meant something in the first few months after 9/11, but just makes me cringe when I hear it now.
Now more than ever.
And how about at loose ends?
Yeah, we can get
does
rid of
that. Still, does
we
that
can get
still
rid of that.
I don't really think so.
Carry any profound... Or how about beyond the pale? I guess this goes along with your outrage notion, Vincent.
Exactly.
That's too much. That's
exactly.
Too much.
I want to know when someone is actually outraged.
Well, right now we have some headlines. Not a perfect segue, but we do need to get to
if we
the
miss the headlines, Femi will be outraged.
There's a perfect segue.
Run
take
for
it,
your life.
Femi.
I'll be outraged at the end of the day. This just in. The Labor Department reported on Thursday, that's just a few minutes ago, that claims for unemployment benefits rose by 35,000 to 380,000. In your sports news, a day after leading the Dallas Mavericks to a first-round exit in their NBA playoff series against New Orleans, Avery Johnson was fired as coach. Johnson said that there was no animosity or bitterness and was thankful for the opportunity. President Bush welcomed...
The entire nation thanks you for Dallas not being in the playoffs.
Let me just play you this little clip because it made me laugh this morning. This is President Bush with the Super Bowl New York Giants winners saying how much he has in common with the Mannings.
We got some things in common. Eli has a father and a brother in the same business he's in. Sometimes the press are skeptical. And he just survived a big wedding.
President Bush on good form there at the White House, entertaining the New York Giants, who of course beat the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 42. What's up with you, John Grouchy?
I don't know.
Are you outraged?
I'm outraged at that comparison between Eli Manning and George Bush.
He's stretching. Thanks.
Thank you, fam.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
With regard to phrases that need to be retired, if you will, is when they say, and there's a something or other, if you will. I hate that phrase. My name is Nan Berland. I'm calling from New York City. Thank you.
Sean from Bradley Beach, New Jersey. The word that I would like to have, or the phrase I'd like to have disappeared, is blue ribbon panel. A blue ribbon panel gets nothing done, and it sounds like a bunch of stodgy old guys that don't know what they're doing anyway. Thank you. Goodbye.
Blue ribbon panel, that actually means idiots. That actually does mean idiots. That's fantastic.
Thank you both for those.
877-8-MY-TAKE is how you can leave a message. And we are retiring phrases today on The Takeaway. Our guest is Vince Williams, who's a columnist for a city paper in Baltimore. That one's great. Blue ribbon panel. Have you ever been on a blue ribbon panel?
I've never been on a blue ribbon panel.
Never again.
But I don't like it for the same reason I don't like superdelegate, because you don't really get what's advertised. Like, I'm thinking blue ribbon, it's the guys and the tails and the actual hats, and there are big deal panel.
So it's a wardrobe question for you on superdelegates?
Surprisingly, it always is. It always is.
Well, how about family values? Jamie tells us via our website, the gap between the words and actions of those who constantly promote family values had a certain ironic humor, he says, there for a while, but it's worn thin since.
Yeah, I mean, family values has no meaning now. There are a lot of business ones, like proactive. I can't stand that. I just can't stand that one.
Here's one that you use sometimes, John. Thanks. It's functionality.
I say functionality too much?
Yeah. Is that a computer word?
It's a big word.
No, it's a word that begins with F.
It begins with F.
Well,
what does it mean exactly?
Well, it means does stuff, I suppose. It would be a better way of saying it.
Okay.
You know, functionality is...
Just thought we'd clear that
up. Is there a difference between functionality and function?
Probably not.
Does the ality make it more... Big?
I'm being ganged up on here, you know?
This is,
with all due respect, I'm outraged. Mission accomplished, guys. Now I'm upset. All right, this is getting out of control here. Let's get some more responses.
Joan Walton says, I hate the phrase, spare the rod and spoil the child.
That sounds like a cry for help.
It's from the Bible. Can't be mad at the Bible.
She decided she didn't like it. She has every right to her opinion.
I hate value added. What does that mean? Value added? It's like value subtracted, value added. It's like value, right? Value, right?
And we've had a lot of these, and this is from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Troy Erickson says, one phrase that should be retired is, I couldn't care less, because everyone says it wrong.
That
they
is
say,
so right.
I could care less, which is the exact opposite meaning. Please put out the word, retire that tired old phrase. Thank you.
Think how much time could be saved in our lives if these phrases were gone.
But sometimes they're shorthands to things. I mean, there's a reason why there are cliches, right? I mean,
you want to save
cliches
now?
Barking up the wrong tree has a very specific meaning.
Right. So we want to save barking up the wrong tree?
I'm just saying it is a shorthand where you don't necessarily have to explain all the reasons why on any particular issue someone is not on point.
877-8-MY-TAKE. 8-MY-TAKE.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project.
Asking, what is responsibility in this day and age?
Everybody has their own opinion.
Thoughts shared at responsibilityproject.com.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, New York Times Radio, and WGBH Radio Boston.
It's Thursday, May 1st. Good morning. And today, while American eyes are on the Democratic race for president, a new poll out by the New York Times and CBS News shows Barack Obama feeling a bit of a pinch among Democratic voters, but that's here in the U.S. In Britain, it's the race for mayor of London where voters will go to the polls. The contest is full of racy headlines about sex and drugs and quips like the incumbent Ken Livingston once calling the American ambassador a chiseling crook, and a conservative challenger, Boris Johnson, who's described himself as a blithering buffoon. Big personalities are American political staples. And BBC anchor Patrick O'Connell says, well, they're the latest American export to London.
Well, good morning from London, John and Adora. You've narrowed down our field in a very kind of mean way. There's a bunch of candidates. But basically, it's true. The way it's being described, it's as if the late Charlton Heston was taking on George Clooney to run London. In the left corner, you've got Ken Livingston, the incumbent mayor, who did describe your ambassador as a crook for not paying congestion charge. And in the right corner, you've got Boris Johnson, a big, blonde-haired, conservative man who's admitted in the past he can come over as a bit of a joke.
You know, actually, we have some sound of Johnson talking about dabbling a bit with cocaine. Let's take a listen.
Have you snorted cocaine?
Yeah, I've tried to, but
you've tried to snort cocaine?
Unsuccessfully, a long time ago.
Sorry.
You can't joke about that stuff.
I sneezed.
Oh, my God.
So the four people around you took cocaine because you went
and David Cameron
went, hey! Very small quantity. It was a long, long time ago. I think it's probably a totally disgusting and ridiculous thing to do. And what else can I say about it?
Sounds
very,
good.
Very, 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 very wrong God. And bad.
Patrick, we're not sure what to make of that. With all that laughter in the background, you have the potential future mayor of a very important city like London. I lived there for years. Londoners take themselves seriously. And there's all this laughter about the potential mayor who tried cocaine.
We do have to spool back a bit. This was made before he announced his candidacy. He was promoted on a sort of Saturday Night Live program. As indeed was the incumbent, Ken Livingston, the mayor of London, has also appeared on this show. It's called Have I Got News For You? That's a clip from a couple of years ago. So they come with this baggage, basically, Adora, but they both candidates have faced really one of the toughest battles of their political career, and there is a lot of policy at it. But it's just that we've imported this style of election to London from you guys.
So you're going to blame us, Patty?
Yeah, no, I am, absolutely, but also thanking you, because I think, you know, it was introduced 10 years ago because it was felt we needed a big city mayor. We didn't have a direct election a decade ago, and it was a desire to give more accountability to the people of London, one of the world's greatest cities. So I think we also thank you for introducing, you know, ultimately this is a real choice, there is policy here, and Londoners are very, very excited. I went and voted this morning. There was a queue of people, first-time voters in front of me, an old lady behind me. Someone said, there's no lead in my pencil to vote. And I said, well, I know how you feel.
That's right, because we need
like
to
an
remind,
awesome party.
But we also need to remind everyone that there you do literally vote with a pencil and a piece of paper, and you put an X next to the candidate that you want, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. This is not some American election machine with a big button and a lever. This is a pencil.
Wow, it's kind of like the Magna Carta, huh?
Well, there's no need to be rude, John. I mean, this is democracy at work, and you know, among the issues are allegations of fleas at City Hall, denied by the incumbent, a big row over buses. You know, this is the city that ultimately had a peasants' revolt here in 1381, and now we're arguing over buses and whether you should be taxed to drive your car into the city centre.
There is some irony here, though. You're saying as the elections have gotten more sensational, people have been more engaged, and so you're expecting, very quickly here, Patrick, you're expecting a good, solid turnout today in the race for mayor in London.
We are. This is a very polarizing time for British politics. We'll learn how the national picture looks, and London has imported a little slice of American big city politics.
Well, Patrick O'Connell, many thanks for those pithy observations. He's a BBC anchor there in London. We enjoy him.
Oh, we love Patrick. And moving to the American election campaign, where there is a very tight race in the upcoming primary in Indiana and also North Carolina, but particularly tight in Indiana, where Andrea Bernstein, the Takeaway's political director, is giving us a live reality-based slideshow as she travels Interstate 65 from north to south in the state. The vote, of course, is next Tuesday. Andrea joins us from the Runcible Spoon, a cafe near the Indiana University campus in Bloomington, home of the University of Indiana and its 30,000 students. Andrea, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, I'm guessing Bloomington is Obama country, but you never know.
Oh, it is Obama country. You know, I saw him yesterday in Indianapolis, and he seemed sort of almost beleaguered. But by the time he got here last night, speaking to 13,000 students, he was in as fine a form as I've ever seen him, and really sort of punching back at some of the blows he's taken this week. Now, he had wanted to start out this week talking about John McCain and John McCain only, but then this issue of the gas tax holiday came up, and he hit very strongly back against Clinton and McCain. He called it the McCain-Clinton gas tax cut, and he's actually had a lot of editorial support for his view on it. And then he gave this stem winder at the end, talking about his personal patriotism and saying his whole personal story, son of a single mother, raised in very modest conditions, now running for president of the United States, is the whole motivation for his candidacy, and it's because it's an only in America story, and he really brought down the house. I was in.
Well, here's some student reaction, Andrea. Let's listen.
It was really inspirational at the end. I was just sobbing. It was really great.
You were sobbing?
I was crying.
Why?
He just really inspired me with his message of hope and bringing people together and actually solving problems. I'm really excited about the chances of him winning.
So. You sound like you're about to sob again.
Yeah.
Is that what you usually do when you're inspired?
Yes. I mean, it doesn't happen like this very often, but... yeah, I think he's amazing. Yeah, I love Obama. Woo, Obama rules! Woo! Yeah,
Obama
rules!
Change your mindset. That's what we need. That's what we're talking about.
Right, yeah.
It's like not just the activity,
right,
but the actual mindset and
yes,
the why we make the decision
yeah
that we make. That's what he wants to challenge.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
You know, the question, Andrea, in you talking to those students is, how can those 30,000 students have an impact on this primary? Do they? Do they vote as residents of the city of Bloomington? How does it work?
Oh, absolutely. They need their student ID, and of course everyone is abuzz because the U.S. Supreme Court just said you need an ID. But if you have your student ID, you can go to the polls. And it's a big campus, 30,000 students, all the professors and staff associated with that. There are other big colleges here. There's Purdue. There's Notre Dame. It will be a big factor in the vote, and this is clearly not lost on Obama. It's almost like a general election now with the vote sort of getting parsed out over the state and everybody working to gin up their constituencies.
So we've seen, Carmel, Indiana. We've seen Gary yesterday, Bloomington this hour. Where are you tomorrow?
Well, I'm off today to Jeffersonville, which is in the very southern part of the state. That's where Hillary Clinton will be campaigning with Bobby Kennedy Jr. Caroline Kennedy is here for Barack Obama, and this state is being fought very hard and down to the wire, and the voters that I am talking to are deeply divided and undecided. So I think that it is really one of those states that remains a big question mark.
Well, Andrea Bernstein, Takeaway's political director, inside the deeply divided state of Indiana as we head towards the primary May 6th. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
That's so interesting.
I have a favorite. I'm just going to pipe in here with our takeaway question. We're asking folks what phrases of overused need to be retired. And Lee called and told us, my contribution to terms that should be retired is boots on the ground.
That's good.
Now, where else would boots be, he asked. They can't be in the air. They can't be in the sky. They can't be on the wall.
John McGee from New York City says, I can't stand this one anymore. Homeland security. Man, I love that one.
That
feels like an oxymoron.
Right.
TSA.
John Lipson.
That means anxiety.
Anxiety. John Lipson from New York City says, two quick phrases I'd like to retire. One is literally, like, I literally died laughing. I know you didn't. And the other is catch 22. People don't really use it the right way, he says.
Catch Catch 22.
Oh, wow.
Catch 22.
Right,
right.
That's true. Well, but that's an interesting one because that was created by, what's his name?
Heller.
Heller.
Yes,
Heller.
Heller. Thank you.
Heller.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
English major.
Major, yes. Your mom is crying now.
So many
boy. Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, keep the My Take questions coming to our website. We're going to post the great ones, and we've gotten so many good ones this morning.
Oh, good ones.
My
really
Take
ones.
At thetakeaway.org or 877-8-MY-TAKE. You want the last word, Vince?
LOL OMG. Text language
lots of
in
love.
The real world.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
You got, there's no there chance go. Of that being retired.
No,
I guarantee
you.
I don't
think so either. How about retiring pre-owned? That's what Matt and you
How about retiring Thursday? Let's just retire Thursday.
Oh, that's nice.
We did. Mission accomplished.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.